Welcome, everyone, to episode 416 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and I am back. We are past the trade deadline. We've had some buyouts, notable buyouts. We're going to talk about all that today, give our first impression of some of the most notable ones, and how it might shake up the title race. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is the man who has probably watched the Snyder Cut more than anyone else on the planet, Morten Jensen. How's it going, my friend?
Well, I mean, look, you're trying to put all the focus over the Snyder Cut, so we won't ask you, how are you doing? You're a new father. Yeah, what are we looking at? Week two? Two and a half weeks into it now?
Yeah, he was born 2 weeks ago on Thursday, so...
Yeah.
We're almost two and a half. He's not dead, so that's probably the biggest win.
Yes.
I think any parent of a newborn would probably sympathize by saying it's both great and awful. Like, yeah. And I don't know where the balance is on any given moment, but no, it's been wonderful, sleep deprivation aside. And as I tweeted the other day, it's given me a chance to finally catch up on Breaking Bad, which I had never seen before this week. Now we're like... Nice. Already halfway through season two. I'll be done by next week at this rate.
Oh, man. I'm going to say something that people are going to be very upset about. So I gave it 16 episodes. Because the first season, I really didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my jam. And I think 16 episodes out of anything is a reasonable sample size to, like, get into the flow of things. Mm-hmm. I couldn't.
Wow.
I don't think it's that good. Like, I saw I can see the appeal on a broad scale, mm-hmm. but I'm not into it. I'm really not. Whenever I tell people that, they're like, no, no, for
Try
shame.
Again.
And I've only seen the Snyder Cut once, by the way.
Really?
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. It's 4 hours, man.
I know. I figured it was just the first day it came out. You just watch it six times.
No, but I definitely did catch it on the first day. I had to, yeah. Of course, I had to. And it was great, and it lived up to my expectations. And, oh, man, restore the Snyderverse is all I'm saying.
Well, I've not seen that, but given the way that this kid sleeps, I'll have an opportunity to soon enough.
Yep.
You know, obviously, I was gone during the madness that was the trade deadline, much more active than I think really anyone was projecting leading up to it. There was a lot of chatter. Mm-hmm. There'd be a pretty quiet deadline, and then deals really started flying, you know, not even like right at the 3 o'clock deadline, but like that morning we got, you know, Vooch. And then I want to start with, this was the culmination. Like, we could just end the podcast now. You know, we've done 416 episodes. I feel like every single 415, we clamored for Aaron Gordon to go trade it to the Denver Nuggets.
Yep.
Aaron Gordon is now a member of the Denver Nuggets, and I just feel like we deserve something. I don't know. We made this happen.
I think we did. I think ultimately we deserve $1 million of whatever his next contract is going to be.
Or just if the Nuggets win a ring with him, we deserve a ring.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I'll take that because then I can pawn it if necessary. It's fine.
Perfect. He hasn't played, really none of these guys have played a ton of games with their new teams yet, so we are very much in small sample size theater with all of them.
Yes.
But what are your first impression of the Nuggets with Gordon, and then Gordon's fit in particular in Denver?
So, obviously, it's only been three games, but you prefaced it nicely by saying it's a small sample size. So here's the thing, people are going to look at the raw stats. They're going to be looking at 11 points, 4 rebounds, 2.7 assists per game. They're going to be looking at the 25% three-point shooting and the 25% free throw shooting. They're going to be like, is he really that good? Yes. Yes. Shut up. Yes, he is. He has been outstanding. The way that he fills the lane, the way that he is just such a target for Jokic on the run. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's freeing up Michael Porter Jr., the way that he's freeing up everyone around him, like it is ridiculous, like the little things that he does. Denver fans, at least some, are basically calling him the new Andre Iguodala because of the way that he's playing there, and I kind of see it. I don't think he'll have low per-game averages for the rest of his Nuggets career, right. But I can definitely see him be a guy who has this much greater influence and effect on a team compared to what his stats might suggest. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just been a revelation. I've been crazy about just watching him, and the way that he also fights around the basket. So I think we can both agree, in 2021, it is pretty uncommon to see two guys of the same team trying to crash the offensive glass and like be together inside of a foot of one another and trying to get a score. But he and Jokic are mixing it up on the inside, and I love it. Like, there is an activity level that we haven't seen before. I think so far, Brian, it's only three games, but all the dreams that you and I had, all the fantasies that we had about the fit is coming true. It is looking really good.
Yeah, I just feel vindicated because remember I was the Nuggets GM for the BR, like fake GM week last year, and I worked very hard to get Aaron Gordon to Denver, and a lot of people were skeptical of it at the time, and I was like, no, believe me, this will work really well. This is before Porter Jr.'s breakout too, so... I mean, this new look starting five of Murray, Barton, Porter, Gordon, Jokic is terrifying. I mean, it just fits so well together. And I think you're right, Mort. You know, Gordon comes from an Orlando team this year that was just stuck in absolute misery. But, you know, we've always kind of said he has a higher ceiling to reach, and he just wasn't going to reach it in Orlando. And now in Denver, I think you're right. Is he going to be a 25-point-per-game scorer? Probably not. I mean, like, he'll have games where he goes off for sure, but I think, you know, scoring-wise, that's not necessarily what they need out of him. They have Jokic, they have Murray, they have Porter. He can fill that glue guy role on both ends of the floor, and he can be devastating in that role. Like, he can fill the Jerami Grant role from last year, but probably do it more effectively. And I think, you know, coming from an Orlando team where they were playing for nothing or playing for like a first-round knockout every year, you know, I don't know that he's necessarily going to be hunting stats. I think he's just going to be recharged by the opportunity to play for a legitimately good team. Like, this is the best team he's ever played on, by far. And these are the best teammates he's ever had, with all due respect to Vooch. Like, Jokic is the leading MVP candidate right now. So I think it's a testament to him that I don't think they've had, maybe they've had one practice at this point, but like, they haven't had a ton of time together, and he's already fitting in extremely well there. I think Nuggets fans should be elated with, especially considering what they gave up. This cost was just not that high for a guy who's a major upgrade to this year's team.
Is there a better fourth starter when you really think about it, just in terms of responsibility, skill set, and whatnot? Because I mean, you have the scoring in Porter, in Jokic, in Murray. Like, they can take care of the offense. Gordon can chip in whenever it's necessary. But it's the defense. It's the secondary playmaking. It's his ability to guard multiple positions. It's so many of these facets of the game that isn't really connected to offense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he slots in so well. He becomes Mr. Everything right off the bat, and he's only 25 still.
Yeah,
I mean, well, I can't even imagine like how good he'll be next year when he's got a full training camp under him, mm-hmm. and he's played half a year with these guys. Mm-hmm. Like, next year, that foursome of Jokic, Porter, Murray, and Gordon could be one of the best foursomes in the entire league, if it isn't already.
Yeah, so that leads me... I have two questions about the Nuggets moving forward now, after the deadline. One, how seriously should we take them as a title contender, knowing that, I mean, they went to the Western Conference Finals last year, but they are currently fifth in the West. They're only a game out of third. They're a game behind the Clippers, a half game behind the Lakers. You know, the Lakers are in free fall with LeBron and AD out, so I think they'll likely end as a top four seed. You know, how do you see them stacking up to a healthy Lakers team, a healthy Clippers team, the Suns, the Jazz?
Well, to answer that, we actually have to go back to the Aaron Gordon trade, to be honest with you, because look at what they gave up. Mm-hmm. They gave up R.J. Hampton, who didn't really play a whole lot because he was a rookie. They gave up Gary Harris, who we love as a human being. We've only heard great things. We know he fights really hard on the court, but obviously there's been a lot of injury issues there. So I think it's fair to say that Gary Harris hasn't really been a major component of the success of the Nuggets this year. Yeah. I think that's reasonable to say. Yeah. So when you look at what they gave up compared to what they gave back, they finally won a trade when it comes to talent acquisition. You know, you and I have been hammering home the point that they have lost a significant portion of talent. Well, they finally made a trade here where they regained that. They got a ton of talent back in Aaron Gordon. And also, hey, they got Gary Clark as well, just in terms of like the trade value, which I like. But is he even I don't know what his contract is. Let me just. He's still on until 2022.
Sure.
But I'm saying he was playing decent basketball with the Magic, like decently, mm-hmm. you know. What I'm looking at here is a team that is kind of recouping some of the losses that they had over the last year or so. I'm seeing a team that now has the talent level to go back up against the league's elite, like you're asking, mm-hmm. and can actually make a difference. I think they have an advantage over the Suns? Yes, I do. I think the Suns in particular, I just think that's a bad matchup for the Suns.
Yeah.
That's not crapping on them. Like, the Suns are playing an amazing brand of basketball, obviously. But, yeah, I just think the matchup doesn't work. The Jazz, I think that's one of those that's tougher, right? Because they're just so dominating right now. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, so many people just not have them included in their, like, finals predictions, which I think is ludicrous because at this point they're just rolling over everyone. So I can't sit here with a straight face and go, oh, no, the Nuggets have these guys. Like, right. It's a lock. I know what we saw in the bubble last year. I get it. That was one of the most competitive series we've ever seen. That could repeat itself. But look, these Jazz, they shouldn't be taken for granted. So I think we should consider them as a candidate. Mm-hmm. But I also think we're a little bit early on. I mean, give me a couple weeks and let's see a little bit more of this. And then I think we're a little bit more ready to ask that question or have a proper answer to it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think with the West, it's all going to come down to matchups in the end, but you could pretty convincingly make a case for 4, 5, maybe even 6 teams to come out. Like, I could see any of the top 6 coming out of the West, if I'm being totally honest. Yeah. Assuming, you know, if the Lakers are totally healthy and they figure out their chemistry, like Marc Gasol is pissed about the Drummond stuff, which we'll get to shortly. You know, that kind of takes away that number one, even though the Lakers are not number one record-wise. I think going into the year, we assumed they were the favorite in the West, if not the favorite overall. Right now, it looks like a pretty wide-open field. So I think the Nuggets have a chance to make it to the finals, and I think you were totally right. You know, given what they gave up, it's not that much. Like, they definitely upgraded their roster at the trade deadline. But am I anointing them the favorites in the West? No, not quite yet.
No.
The other Nuggets question I had, and we could just do this briefly because, again, small sample size, it might just be total overreaction at this point. But Jokic, since Gordon made his debut, has only averaged 17 points, 9 rebounds, less than 7 assists. They are whooping on teams, so that's part of it. He hasn't had to play a ton of minutes, only 32.8 over those 3 games. But if Gordon does start to take more of the offensive responsibility, Michael Porter Jr. keeps playing as well as he has as of late, Jamal Murray as well, and Jokic's statistical impact declines over these coming weeks, you know, I think right now he is a pretty clear front runner for MVP, given the injuries to Embiid and LeBron. Sounds like right. Embiid's coming back tonight. Dame's in the mix as well. You know, Steph Curry, people are making a case for. There are a lot of guys still, James Harden. Do you think Gordon could ultimately end up hurting Jokic's MVP case?
I don't care.
Fair enough.
that doesn't matter. You know who also wouldn't care about that, I think? Nikola Jokic.
I would hope so, yeah.
I don't think he cares whatsoever. It might. I don't even know. It's so early that I think they're just trying to get accustomed to playing alongside each other. Besides, here's the thing about Jokic. He was always more of a reluctant scorer. Mm-hmm. Like, this year he had to take on that mantle, I feel, because the team was just lacking in talent, as I have alluded to so many times before. And they didn't have the same offensive production out there. He had to step it up. I think at one point in the season he was averaging, I could be wrong, did he crack 28 points per game? As an average, I think he
probably at one point, he was around 27 for most of it.
I mean, and I don't necessarily think that that's in his future either. I have a feeling that this season is going to be one of those outliers where we look back at it historically and we go, oh my, he really caught fire that year, but totally ignoring the context of, no, it was kind of necessary for him to produce those numbers. Like, he can. He's going to be one of those guys, when everything is said and done, we look back at his career, we're going, oh, like, he had a decent scoring average.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who could have done so much more offensively, but is just so much of a team player. So if that hurts his MVP chances, okay, then there's a problem with the voting. There's a problem with the voters as well, because it's not because his influence or impact is in any way diminished. Mm-hmm. It would only be raw box score numbers that would decline, but the team would be better. Right. So I'm still on I was actually on MVP Kawhi for a while, but I think I'm pivoting over to Jokic at this point. He's so good. I can't ignore it. So I don't think it's going to hurt ultimately. I think people are smart.
Yeah, and the thing that could work in his favor, even if his box score numbers go down, one, his advanced metrics, he's still got a massive lead over the field and pretty much everything.
Right.
And two, I mean, if Gordon makes the team better, and if they do surge into the 3 seed or the 4 seed, you know, that was the big knock against Jokic early in the year. Like, the Nuggets were the 6th seed for a good chunk of the season. So, you know, when you're comparing him to Embiid, who is playing for the 1 seed in the East, that was right. A factor, you know, in Embiid's favor. Now the Nets are ahead of the Sixers, and if the Nuggets move up, suddenly that argument is, you know, no longer applies to Embiid as well. So, yeah, I mean, right. I said it mid-season. You know, I had Embiid as my mid-season MVP, but I said if I was placing money, I would put it on Jokic. I still feel that way, although now that is not a hot take because he is the Vegas favorite by a significant margin. So I hope you listened back then because we tried to make you some money a couple weeks ago. All right, boy, let's go to a couple teams that made some additions on the buyout market. The Brooklyn Nets, let's start there, who got both Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, just throwing as many washed bigs as they can in front of Nick Claxton.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
So Griffin has played 5 games for them, shooting very well, 65%. He's averaging about 9 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists in 19 minutes. Aldridge has only played 1 game. He had 11 points in his Nets debut on 40% shooting, and 9 rebounds and 6 assists as well. So what do you think of these guys on the Nets? You know, the super all-star lineup now. We could have Harden, Durant, Irving, Aldridge, and Blake Griffin if Steve Nash is so inclined.
Yeah, so I didn't watch the Aldridge game. Mm-hmm. But for what I've seen from Blake Griffin is, you know, you and I, when we talked about this at one point, we were pretty much aligned on the fact that Blake Griffin would make a good contributor on the Nets if he was playing in the right role. Mm-hmm. You know, you had guys out there going, wow, they got Blake Griffin. Well, that means that he's going to be starting. He's going to be an all-star. Right. No. Relax. That was never going to happen. He was going to be an offensive-minded big coming off the bench, playing limited amount of minutes where he would be efficient because he was going up against second stringers, and he would be set up by both Kyrie and James Harden. Like, you know what? He's shooting 65% from the field at this point, and it's a lot of those shots have been gimmies, which is the plan.
Right.
Like, that is not a negative thing to say about Blake Griffin. He's in the right spot at the right time, and he's making most of his opportunities. He's cutting the right time. He's posting up the right times. Like, I like what I'm seeing out there. He's doing exactly as we thought he would be doing, and no, I love it. And tomorrow I'll be catching their next game, where I'll get to see LaMarcus Aldridge, and where he will give Nikola Vucevic a run for his money, I think, because just by being able to stretch out. But no, that this team is insanely talented. Like, we can talk about guys being washed up, but that doesn't remove the talent. Like, that doesn't remove their IQ, that doesn't remove their experience. And I think those two additions are tremendous when you look at just the ability of giving them those experiences and going, hey, you know what, my body might not be able to physically do these certain things anymore, but my mind still wants to, so I can share with everyone else on the roster what I kind of wanted to do. Like, if those two guys, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, came together and said, you know what, Nick Claxton, we're going to take you under both our wings. We are going to shape you over the next over the remainder of the season. Then Nick Claxton, who's already a hell of an NBA player, is going to come back next year as something insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, the good thing is for the Nets, we said this, I think, when they were at least flirting with Griffin. I think he actually signed with them after I was on leave for a bit. But we were saying, like, as you said, he wasn't going to play 35 minutes. He wasn't going to, you know, they weren't going to lean on him too much. They were going to trot him out for 15, 20 minutes a game.
Right.
If he plays well, great. If not, they have other options. Same deal with LaMarcus Aldridge. If anything, they have an embarrassment of riches at this point, so they can just kind of throw stuff at the wall and see what works on a game-by-game basis, matchup-by-matchup basis. It's a good problem to have, as long as all of these guys are bought in. And, right, you know, presumably, if you're coming to this team and you're signing a minimum contract, you're not coming in with inflated expectations given their age and where they are in their respective careers. I think they're probably more amenable to, we'll just do whatever it takes to win. We don't, you know, we don't care if we're playing 5 minutes in a night or if we don't play in a given series because we just aren't going to be a good fit. We just want to win a ring. Like, that's right. That's why you sign with this team. So, you know, do we think that these guys are the reason the Brooklyn Nets will or will not win the title this year? No, of course not. It comes down to their big three. But having this sort of optionality is only going to behoove them in the playoffs. I guess my question for you more about the Nets is, given how many moving pieces they've had this year, between start of the year, we have KD and Kyrie and the young kids, we trade for James Harden early on. KD's been in and out of the lineup for most of the year. He's only played 19 games. Now you add guys like Aldridge, like Griffin. Do you think they've had enough time together to really hit their stride by, you know, playoffs are coming up in like 6 weeks or so? Do they have enough time to, like, really have developed enough chemistry to make it as far as they're hoping to go this year?
Well, so I don't think the one thing cancel the other one out necessarily. Okay. I don't think they have had enough time, not by a long shot, because like you said, there's so many players that have gone in and out. Like 26 different players have played for the Nets this year. 26. That's an insanely large number. So of course there's been a lot of roster turnover there. Based on those circumstances, you can never expect them to just be clicking.
Yeah.
That said, the talent is just so ridiculous that I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, well, you know what? They didn't really gel to the same extent as the Utah Jazz did. That means I can rule them out as a finals contender. Like, no, they're just so damn talented. And if KD decides that he actually going to play a game again this year, they would be even more frightening.
Yeah.
No, I'm annoyed. I don't think he should have been an all-star. I understood that everyone was like all up in arms, but 19 games, man. And look, he didn't even play after. He's missed 30 games this year. I think we got a little bit too high too quickly. And at the same time, it's actually giving me that little bit nervous mind in the back of my head. You know how, oh, he looked okay. Yeah. Like, he looks completely right.
Yeah.
And then he's missed 30 games. I'm just like, 19 games is not a great sample size. Like, it's fine, but it's not huge. So now I'm going back to being a little bit skeptical, which I don't want to be. I just hope that when he comes back, he's like, shut up, Mort. I got this. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool, Cap.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right about that, though. Like, yes, he came out guns blazing, looked like the old KD, but, you know, he's now been out for upwards of 2 months with this hamstring injury. And I know they're just being super cautious, as they should, coming off of the injury that he is. And then again, knowing we've got the talent to stay afloat. I mean, they're the number one seed in the East, even without him. So we have the talent to stay afloat. Let's get him healthy, get him ready for the playoffs. But yes, I think it's fair to at least have that lingering concern in the back of your mind of, okay, even if he makes it back by mid-May, he's ready to go. Game one of the playoffs. Is he going to make it through those next 2 months unscathed? Or, you know, do we have to worry at some point that something bad could happen? And, you know, they've got the talent, even without him, to put up a good fight. But I think there's a difference between fully healthy Brooklyn, and I think pretty much everyone would anoint them as the favorite in the East at that point, versus without KD, Philly, Milwaukee, and maybe a couple other teams would start to see more light, you know, to get past them and get to the finals.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because here's the thing. He is, you know, healthy KD, I still think, is the toughest player you have to guard in the NBA. Mm-hmm. A fully healthy Kevin Durant, because, like, I'm not saying you can guard LeBron James, because you can't, but there's a different component to it when it's KD. Like, from a scoring perspective, you can't stop him. This is a 7-footer who pulls up off the dribble from like 30 feet away from the basket on occasion, and with such a high release point that it doesn't matter if you Mo Bamba, you're not going to get that ball. Mm-hmm. You're just not going to get there. So when you take someone of that caliber with that particular set of skills out of the equation, yes, you get worse, and you also lessen the layers that are otherwise available to you in terms of offensive schemes, offensive versatility, all those things just poof, they go away. So if you can reintroduce that to this team and to any against anyone they're going up against in the playoffs, oh boy. I mean, the Bucks, the Sixers, the Celtics, like whoever, they would just be like, they would have great, great headaches because of that. Because, okay, then you overload on KD. Well, now you have James Harden to worry about. Oh, okay, let's overload on Harden. Well, there you go, Kyrie Irving. I mean, it is such a headache, an additional headache, I should say, to have KD playing. So the Brooklyn Nets right now, I have to assume, are just, you know, wishing upon a star every single night.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's move to another team that's dealing with some major injury issues, but also got an impact player from the buyout market, the Los Angeles Lakers, who are still without Anthony Davis. LeBron James is out with a high ankle sprain as well, but they did pick up Andre Drummond for the stretch run after the Cleveland Cavaliers bought him out. Again, very small sample here. Andre Drummond played one game. He played 14 minutes before he suffered a toe injury. So this is more just a conceptual thing than like taking stock of the 14 minutes he's played with them so far on a team without the two best players. But how did you feel about the addition of Drummond? Do you think he actually addresses some of their big needs, or is he kind of redundant for, you know, what they have already?
So am I allowed not to be outraged by the Lakers signing Andre Drummond? Because it seems like NBA Twitter is not going to allow anyone to not be outraged by it.
Outraged in the sense of, like, the buyout market is unfair, or?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because I wrote an article for Forbes basically saying, look, this is the reality of the situation. Plus, Andre Drummond was a buyout guy for a reason.
Right.
If he wasn't, then they could have flipped him in a trade. There's a reason nobody wanted him in a trade. And let's just look at certain things here. The Lakers are ninth in rebounding, so they don't really need a whole lot of rebounding. Mm-hmm. They are 25th in free throw percentage. That's a place they could get better. Oh, Andre Drummond is not really a great free throw shooter. Like, he's actually pretty awful.
Right.
That's not going to help them. Where is it going to make them drastically better is what I'm worried or not worried about, which is something I'm curious about, yeah. rather. Like, yeah, sure, he can come in, he can have those games, right, where he gives you 20 and 15, hell, 20 and 20. And on any given night, his raw talent level can absolutely win you a game. But what about the other nights where he looks completely discombobulated, where he looks completely disengaged, where he just looks like he wants this game to be over within 5 minutes, and he just cannot be asked to do anything?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what about those? You think LeBron is going to enjoy those times? I don't know. I don't think so. But I do think there is something to it, because there's a different component here. I know you were going to touch on it, so I'm just beating you to the punch here. Marc Gasol is unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure why, because what he said is, now I'm option, or now I'm plan C or D.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, Mark, buddy, that's a good situation for you to be in, my man, because look, you're averaging 4.8 points per game. I think from an offensive perspective, you know what, being plan C, That would be putting you pretty high, my dude. Plan D. I would kind of argue that's a little bit high for your current production. Like, I understand he's still the king of providing certain things that isn't really represented in the box score, mm-hmm. which is completely fair. But like, you still need to produce. Like, you still need to put up certain numbers. You can't. I don't care who you are. If you walk through an NBA box score and you're just like laying eggs in every department, I don't think that you are helping your team. As then you can throw in, oh, he's a good screener, he's doing that. No. If you're just putting up no stats whatsoever, there is a definite limit to how much you're helping your team. I don't care. Like, especially on a day-to-day basis. And he is just reaching that level right now where his production is so low that you just can't expect him to be, you know, the same guy that he used to be, and you can't expect him to play more minutes and have a higher responsibility, nor should he expect it. I think this is out of character for him, not being self-aware and realizing where he's coming from. So in that sense, Andre Drummond could step in and at least give you some of the stats that you need, some of the production things. Like, sure, Mark can give you the passing, and he can come in and give you some very sturdy defense, but look, maybe in a pinch, you need someone, because no one else is hot, to come in and give you 15 points and 12 rebounds. Mm-hmm. Well, Drummond can do that. Or maybe you're just being out-muscled, in which case, hey, Andre, come on in. I don't care if you score a bucket, but we need you to get 20 rebounds in 15 minutes. Oh, okay, cool.
Right.
So that component is there. Is he going to ultimately turn them into the super team? No. No, and I think people who are bringing that word up in connection with Drummond are really overrating the player that he is now.
Yeah, they haven't watched Andre Drummond play basketball. They're just watching the box score, like, oh, cool, he could put up 15 and 15 every night, but he's also giving up a ton on the other end of the floor, and he's not. Yeah, there are a lot of negatives that come with Andre Drummond, which is why, you know, the Cavaliers could get him for like a second round pick and an expiring contract a year ago, and why they couldn't find any team to take him at this year's trade deadline. So, yeah.
Oh, by the way, can I give you a super fun stat?
Oh boy.
By the way,
I'm worried, but yes.
Yeah. So we agree that Andre Drummond is 6'10", around 280, right?
If that is what he's listed as, sure, I believe it.
So somewhere around that, he's a big fella. Mm-hmm. So we agree that he should be able to convert at a very high rate around the basket, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So 54.5%, how does that do you?
It's not.
How does that work for you?
It's a Russell Westbrook number right there.
Like, I was completely thrown off when I saw that. This year, 54.5%.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me? That's insanely low.
Yeah, I mean, so for the you touched on Gasol, and I think it's a point worth bringing up, because, you know, A, Gasol is unhappy, and we saw last year with the Lakers, they alternated between JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard in certain matchups in the playoffs, and it worked really well. They got both guys to buy in, and, you know, if Dwight didn't play much in a series, that was fine. He's, since this year, spoken about that experience a lot, how, you know, he's just going to do what's best for the team. Gasol hopefully will reach that point. He'll reach that nirvana in the next 6 weeks by the time the playoffs actually come, and hopefully that's the case for Drummond as well. I guess this year they also have Montrezl Harrell to factor into that front court mix, and you're probably not going to see a ton of minutes with, or you shouldn't see a ton of minutes with Drummond, Harrell, Gasol, Harrell, you know, any of those three guys sharing the court together.
Right.
Because, I mean, ultimately, we saw it last year. Some of their best lineups have Anthony Davis at center, so none of these guys are going to be playing in important minutes at some point in the playoffs, which is, again, it's just, you know, not that Andre Drummond can't help this team in any way, but I'm with you. You know, if I'm looking at impact additions at the buyout market, Drummond on paper seems like he should be that type of guy. I'm not sold that he actually is for this Lakers team in particular. If they had, you know, if he went to Charlotte, I would be saying a totally different thing. Or if he went to Boston even, I might be saying a totally different thing. If he went to a team that had more of a hole in the front court and it didn't have Anthony Davis, who will hopefully be healthy by the playoffs, then it could be a totally different story. But I don't know. Maybe he's just like a regular season innings eater, which could have some value. Like maybe they just want to put Marc Gasol on ice for 6 weeks and just say, get to the play. Like we don't want to put too much wear and tear on you. AD's been out for a while. When he comes back, we're going to ramp him back slowly. Let's just play Drummond and Harrell to get through the regular season. We don't care where our playoff seating is. And come May 22nd or whatever the start of the playoffs is, you know, that's when we'll go full speed ahead. And we don't care about how we divvy up these minutes in the front court. But, yeah, it's like the same deal with, you know, with Griffin and Aldridge for the Nets. Andre Drummond is not going to be the reason why the Lakers do or do win the title this year. He could be the reason they don't win the title if they play him a lot and he's, like, you know, defensively isn't paying attention, because that's another thing. I mean, the Lakers have one of the best defenses in the league right now. Is Andre Drummond going to contribute to that once everyone is back healthy? I don't know. I don't think so. He'll block shots, but is he going to be the anchor of a top three defense? Probably not.
No. And look, I think you have to just look at him as a luxury player, and that's about it.
Yeah.
If he gives you something good, okay. To me, I think when you're talking about the Lakers nowadays, it seems like 80% of people are basically covering Drummond.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a far more interesting thing to talk about with the Lakers, which is Dennis Schroeder, you know, turning down that four-year, $80 million extension.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is far more an important subject than talking about Andre Drummond, who's going to play more of a bit role on them moving forward. Like, Dennis Schroeder turning down $20 million a year. Like, that is, because if that means obviously that he looks at himself as being worth way more than that. So what are the Lakers looking at here? Like, just in terms of hanging on to him in the long term.
Yeah.
That almost seems like an impossibility.
Yeah, I mean, he's correctly reading the market and knows a lot of teams carved out a lot of cap space this summer, and suddenly the market's looking a lot more barren than it did six months ago. So I don't blame him for betting on himself, especially if he does have a big role in the playoffs. But yeah, it's probably not great news for the Lakers if he's turning down that type of money.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And that he's someone I would argue carries way more importance for them moving forward, especially this season, for their talent aspirations than Andre Drummond.
Yeah, totally agree with that. That's actually a good place to pivot, Mort, to go to the Miami Heat, who made a couple of big pickups at the trade deadline. Most notably, Victor Oladipo. They traded Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, and I forget what, like, hardly anything. It was just a total, Houston should really be relegated to the G League for at least a couple of years for how badly they've screwed this thing up over the last 2 months. So what do you think of the Oladipo experience? We know he's been, I mean, I feel like since last year there have been a lot of Oladipo to Miami smoke. We thought it might happen in free agency, but he made it very clear that he wanted to go to this Heat team. How much do you see him helping them get back on track this season. They just have not been the type of, finals contender that they were last year.
Defensively, I'm not going to lie to you. It could be insanely fun to watch. Could you just imagine this? I was thinking about this the other day. Depot at the one. You have Jimmy, I guess, at the two. Iggy at the three. Ariza at the four and Bam at the five. Just for defensive purposes. Switch everything. Like, just go nuts. How do you score on that lineup? How do you get a good shot off there? I don't think you do. So from a defensive perspective and the defensive versatility that he does offer, that intrigues me. Offensively, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Because he's just such a non-shooter now.
Yeah.
This is just not a part of his game that was evolved or improved to a point where he became a knockdown three-point shooter. He is not a natural jump shooter. And he's reaching that age now where it's becoming increasingly more difficult to see him as one in the future.
Yeah.
So what is his offensive role going to be? Like, Jimmy's primarily a slasher. Bam is also a guy who scores mostly from inside the three-point line. Kendrick Nunn, while he can't shoot the ball, he's actually hitting 2 threes a game. He's also one of those burly guys that you kind of want to see establish himself more on drives. Dragic is a modest three-point shooter, even though he can hit it. But outside of that, like, Iggy's not a good three-point shooter. Like, Trevor Ariza, that's pretty hit or miss. That's mostly for his defense now. He's gotten older. Like, what do you do with Depot here? Like, if you're playing him in lineups with Jimmy and Bam, you have three non-shooters in there. Like, last year, you and I had the conversation. Is it a problem that Miami has, they have two non-shooters on the floor?
Yeah.
Now they're adding a third. So offensively, I think there's a ceiling there now, which is not that high. But defensively, good Lord, it could get fantastic. So it's really one of those situations where I don't think it's a good fit from a scoring perspective. But the Heat have this understanding or this philosophy that you can never have too many good defenders. And you know what? I get it. It's super intriguing. But I just don't know if he is as playable as we think he is, especially in the playoffs, if he's not making shots.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's been my concern with the conceptual Oladipo to Miami fit for as long as this has been in the rumor mill is how does he fit with Jimmy and Bam? Can you have that many non-shooters on the floor at one time? And as you said, Jimmy is much more of a slasher. I think Oladipo is much more of a slasher or a driver than he is a shooter at this point of his career as well. So the spacing is going to get crowded around the paint. I mean, you'll give respect to Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Dragic. Other than that, I think you kind of just pack the paint and dare the Heat to shoot.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't even care if you have Duncan Robinson or Tyler Hero on either flank. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. If I'm an NBA defense, I'll live with Duncan Robinson hitting six threes on me, and I'll live with Tyler Hero hitting four. I'm okay with that. I am totally okay with that if it means I'm just clocking the lane and I'm making sure that I'm stopping the driving game of Jimmy. I'm stopping the driving game of Vic. You can't really check Bam because he's just so big and strong, but you can at least, if you clock the paint, it'll still be more difficult for him to manufacture a shot. So you're right. This is one of those situations where you just go, you know what, shoot away. It's fine. It's fine. You just don't have the necessary firepower to punish us. Like, maybe you win a game here and there because you just catch fire and Duncan Robinson hits like 12 three-pointers. Right. Okay. But those are not the normal odds. Like, we're going to play that. And in the playoffs, I think this could be a huge thing that teams are scheming against. And I have to assume, moving forward, that the Heat are going to stagger Jimmy and Oladipo for as much as possible. But, like, that too is kind of difficult because Jimmy's averaging 34 minutes.
Yeah.
That leaves 14. So, okay, then you give Victor Oladipo those 14, but he's still looking like a starter. He still wants starter minutes. He wants to play probably 32, 35 himself. So you need to play him with Jimmy for around 20 minutes per game almost.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the solution, is just try to limit the number of minutes you play with all three of those guys, Jimmy, Depot, and Bam. And then if Depot insists that he like has to be a starter, okay, but just pull one of these guys pretty early. And again, like, there are ways to stagger it so they're not going to all spend 35 minutes together. I think the one thing working in really all three of their favor is that they're all pretty good playmakers. So even yes. though they're not, none of them are great shooters. I mean, at least Oladipo, he's willing to pull the trigger. He's not a good shooter, but like, you know, Bam just won't shoot a ton of threes. Jimmy won't shoot a high volume of threes. Oladipo will shoot them. You'll just live with those shots. I think that's, you know, I think teams will still try to really scheme to stop or just stick with Robinson and Hero around the, and Dragic too, around the perimeter. I think they'll just say, Victor, if you want to take 10 threes a game, by all means, friends. Like, that is a win for us more often than not.
Right.
But because, you know, if you do just basically put all five bodies in the paint, you are going to leave guys open around the perimeter. So when Jimmy's driving, when Depot's driving with the ball, those guys can kick it out very easily. So that is the one thing that can actually work in Miami's favor, just having so many guys who can create off the dribble. And we saw how important that was for them last year. I mean, Dragic took on a huge, huge role in the playoffs and, you know, helped usher them to the finals. You mentioned Ariza. That was another pickup. And then they have Bielitsa as well. So, Mort, I mean, right now the Heat are sixth in the East. They are one game above 500, but the Hornets are fourth, and they just lost LaMelo for the season, Gordon Hayward for 4 weeks. So they're about to go plummeting. You know, Atlanta is tied with Miami for fifth. So, you know, I think Miami has a pretty clear path here. It's going to probably be between Atlanta and Miami for the number four seed. How seriously do you take them in the playoffs? Like, do you think they could beat Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee in a series?
I mean, it's a tough question because there's so many things that like that kind of go together with that. I don't think, when I look at the rosters of Brooklyn and Philly and Milwaukee, like the answer I would go to is no, not initially. But then when you go into it, you could also start to ask the question, is there a team better geared defensively, for example, to stop the Brooklyn Nets?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be enough? Now, personally, no, I don't think so. I would probably choose the Brooklyn Nets in that scenario. But I'm not going to sit here and say that the Heat couldn't just put on one of the greatest defensive displays we've ever seen in the playoffs and somehow move past them. I'm not gonna rule that out, because look at that personnel defensively. The Philly is tough, though. Like, yeah, sure, they have Bam to match up with Joel Embiid, but Embiid is just, this year, there's no one. There's no one who can really guard him. I mean, that matchup is still Joel's.
Yeah.
And then you kind of look around that roster, and you know, Tobias is playing really, really well. Ben is still there. Now you have this zone buster in Seth Curry. George Hill came in the trade deadline. There's just so many more components now for them to be one of those teams that aren't just reliant upon scoring from 10 feet and in.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes them far more unpredictable. I will say, of the three, I think Philly is a team that could stand, or at least is in a tougher situation if they're matched up with the Heat. I could see the Heat giving them a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee's ironically the one team I would pick, like, hands down.
Oh, in such a series.
Yeah. No, I realize that sounds a little bit screwy, but I just don't see what they have there in terms of Giannis this year.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. Giannis is playing. I get we're not talking about him as an MVP candidate, even though we totally should.
Mm-hmm.
But he's taking this step back, as we talked about earlier with Jokic and Eric Gordon. Like, Jrue Holiday is in there now, and he's keeping things honest. Like, Giannis is kind of like laying back in the weeds a little bit. Middleton is establishing himself far more. DiVincenzo is coming on. Brook Lopez has started hitting threes again at a better rate. Pat Connaughton has come on. you know, they have better bench depth now. I don't know. This team can screw with everyone. I just don't feel comfortable, whoever I am, going up against Milwaukee. And I think Giannis could just unleash hell on this team.
Yeah.
Because how do you guard him? He's too quick for Bam, and he's too big for everyone else.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming they would probably win a first-round series against Atlanta, the Knicks, whoever they end up facing in that 4-5 matchup. And right. So, yeah, whichever team... whether it's Brooklyn, Philly, or Milwaukee, whichever team draws Miami in round two, it would not be thrilled. Or they shouldn't be thrilled. I mean, you know, it's probably better than drawing, you know, one of the Nets, Sixers, and Bucks. Like, the other two teams are going to have to play each other, which is also going to be really tough. But I do think Miami is pretty clearly still the fourth best team in the East, despite what their record might suggest. So,
and by the way, I realize that the Heat beat them 4-1 last year.
Yeah, I was about to say.
No, I get it. Okay. But I think it's different, though.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no Jay Crowder this time. The last time, they were just gunning as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they had a lot of three-point shooters. So, offensively, the Heat were able to really step up and provide this punch. And I also think, again, I'm giving Bud this last chance here. I think now that he's being somewhat ridiculed twice in the playoffs, I have this suspicion that he's going to roll out something that we haven't seen before. It wouldn't shock me if he finally comes prepared.
Yeah, and
plus,
they have Drew Holiday this year. That's a
that was my next okay, point. Yeah. They don't have Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah,
Eric Bledsoe is not there anymore. That's good. I mean, that is only going to make the Bucks better. So I think we're sleeping on Milwaukee, Bri.
No, I agree. I think it's what's factoring into why Giannis isn't being mentioned in the MVP race, even though you're right, he totally should be. He's probably the second best candidate right now, given, you know, production plus time missed or lack of time missed at this point. But yeah, it's very much still the you burned us twice in the playoffs and we just don't believe in you. And you know, you're not running away with the number one seed in the East like you were the past 2 years. So now we're especially skeptical, even though this is what we have been begging them to do. We've been saying, throw away some regular season games if it means you're trying out different looks and different lineups and different schemes and experimenting in the regular season. You know you're going to be in the playoffs. You know you're going to be a top three seed or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Try stuff new, because then we've run into a problem where if you don't, and a team figures out your scheme, like their scheme was really good in the regular season last year, and then they ran into Miami, solved it, and they did not have a plan B, and just ran their head against a brick wall for five games. So,
right.
Yeah, I think the Bucks, like, I think that the Nets, Sixers, and Bucks are all, you know, a tier above anyone else in the East. And I think you could probably argue the Nets are a tier above the Sixers and the Bucks as well. But yeah, the Bucks absolutely should be mentioned as one of the most legit title contenders in either conference. Like, I have no question that that team, if everything breaks right, could make it in there. And that's actually a good place for us to seg more, because there were a couple other notable additions at the trade deadline for East contenders, or hope, in one case, a East hopeful contender. That could shake up the race. So let's start with the Bucks with PJ Tucker. How do you think he factors into, you know, what the Bucks are hoping to accomplish this year?
I mean, we've had the PJ Tucker discussion before. I still don't think offensively he's providing much of anything so far. This is of course, it's a very small sample size. He's played just three games for the Bucks ever since getting traded. But he scored a grand total of 3 points in 44 minutes.
Yep.
Defensively, he's still what you can expect from someone his age who was a good defender, who still is a good defender. But, you know, he's lost a step. He's not a 30-year-old PJ Tucker anymore. He's my age now. He's 35. So it's getting old. It's getting a little bit choppy of him, just in terms of the flexibility, moving all around the court. still a net positive in that regard, but I don't see him being the guy to ultimately swing things. Like, I could see him in a playoff series come in and provide, you know, a good stop here and there, and have maybe a quarter here and there where he plays really good defense and the announcers are going to be talking about it and like, yo, this game really came down to PJ Tucker stopping two drives in the second quarter. I'm like, okay. But that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, he gives them more versatility to run out Giannis at the five lineups, or I guess it could technically be PJ Tucker at the five lineups, but you know, you can have...
Yeah, inverted.
Yeah, you can have Drew, Dante, Middleton, Giannis, and PJ Tucker, and that'll give you a different look than what you do if you have those, you know, the other four plus Brook Lopez. So I at least like it from that perspective. They didn't give up a ton to get him. So, you know, they moved down a couple spots in the draft and gave up DJ Wilson, who was not playing very much for them. So I like the gamble. I mean, I'm like you. I don't know that he's going to swing the playoff series by himself, but I could see him swing a game, especially in the right matchup. I mean, if you're looking at the rest of the East and you're saying we're going to have to go against a Ben Simmons, a Tobias Harris, a Kevin Durant, now a Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, whoever the case may be, yeah, maybe PJ Tucker can handle one of those matchups better than Bobby Portis could, or better than Brook Lopez can. So, again, it comes down to Bud experimenting, and that's believing that at your own peril. But, you know, the Bucks front office, I think, did well to give him the options that he needs at his disposal for the playoffs. Now he just actually needs to use them. They did also pick up Jeff Teague as a buyout guy, because they traded DJ Augustine, their main backup point guard, in the Tucker deal. Any high hopes for Teague?
No, they downgraded. They really downgraded there. Going from Augustine to Teague, I don't consider that a win. I'm not really sure what they're going to try to do there, if they're going to give an extended run in the playoffs to Drew, or if they're going to give, I guess, Bryn Forbes point guard minutes, even though, yuck, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So here's a crazy thought. Maybe you actually run with Connaughton and DiVincenzo more on the ball afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, coming off the bench. I know Dante's starting full-time, but, like, you know, he can play a lot with the second unit. Maybe you have those guys handle the ball a little bit more. I just don't want to see Jeff Teague play valuable minutes in the playoffs.
That's, right.
I think he's done for. And honestly, that whole, if that was the price for PJ, I don't know, man, because they moved off of Torrey Craig. I had to find his name there earlier this season. Like, why wouldn't you just stick with Craig and then keep Augustine and then run from there? Like, I don't think I really saw the need in going for Tucker and Teague instead of those two. Like, yeah, I get that Tucker is an upgrade over Craig, but is he enough of an upgrade to counterweigh the downgrade from Augustine to Teague?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair question. I would assume they'll just run a lot of their offense through their top three guys. And as you said, you know, probably just kind of punt on a backup point guard, a nominal backup point guard, because I cannot imagine, having seen how Teague fared in Boston, I can't imagine they're like, oh, yeah, we can definitely count on Jeff Teague for 15 or 20 minutes a night.
right.
Yeah. Philly also made a move. You mentioned earlier George Hill coming in for a couple second-round picks, Tony Bradley. We haven't seen him play. He's recovering from thumb surgery, but just thoughts on his fit conceptually on the Sixers team?
No, conceptually it's great. He can shoot. He's a big guard. He's got some defensive chops to him. He isn't an overpowering offensive player who's ball dominant, which means that the ball's still going to go plenty to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris and Seth Curry. Like, he just provides you with some staple two-way play. I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, you know, Seth Curry, I think it could be argued, is not a great defender. He is an otherworldly shooter. So if it comes down to like offensive defense, you can flip those two around. Danny Green is still around. Shake Milton is still around for offensive purposes. I kind of like, you know, the conceptual fit of Hill there. I don't think he's going to score a whole lot. I think people are going to look at it in a couple of weeks and go, wow, George Hill isn't really performing to what the level we expected, because he might just be averaging like 6 or 7 points per game. Mm-hmm. But that's not really the point of it. It's the point of him bringing shooting. It's the point of him bringing defense. It's the point of him bringing size at a crucial position. It's him coming in as another ball handler. There are just so many sub-layers to his game that I kind of like. Plus, I think he's just Doc's kind of guy. Honestly, when you look at the way he fights and competes and plays defense, I think those two just, I think it's a good match.
Yeah, I was pounding the George Hill drum for the weeks leading up to the trade deadline. I just thought, given the respecting asking price, he was much more realistic than Kyle Lowry. I wrote a piece at Forbes about it, so I don't want to go into too much detail. You can check that out, but I think just the versatility that he brings, he's going to come off the bench at first, so he'll take some of the playmaking duties off of Shake Milton's hands, which will help. Shake can be more off the ball. But, you know, Daryl, after the night of the trade deadline, was talking about, like, now we can play lineups where we have 5 two-way guys. Like, basically, he didn't name Seth Curry, but he more or less alluded to, we can close with Simmons, Danny Green, George Hill, Tobias, and Embiid.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's hard to find a weak spot in that lineup.
I think it is, yeah. Like, I don't know what that would be. I mean, of course, the Ben Simmons shooting concerns still remain.
Sure.
But I think it is offset a little bit by the fact that you now have George Hill there, because he is not a shabby three-point shooter. And a lot of people don't necessarily associate him with being a great three-point shooter until last year when he led the league.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But he is very steady.
Yeah.
He just is. He always has been, and I think that reliability is such a big plus. And that's probably a good word when you think about the Sixers, right? Just reliability, having a certain baseline. Instead of, you know, last year it was these big swings. Like, they could play like freaking champions one night, and then they could have a back-to-back, and on the second one, they look like a G League team.
Yeah.
So they just need some stability.
Yeah. Yeah. And Daryl also talked about low turnover rate. George Hill is very careful with the ball, which is good because the Sixers are not traditionally. They are toward the top of the league in turnovers. Yeah. George Hill average was like one per game. So having that type of ball security, especially in the second unit, will help a lot. Yeah. I'm super high on the fit. I can't wait to see him make his debut whenever that happens. Let's wrap up with Evan Fournier and the Boston Celtics. Came so close to acquire Nikola Vucevic, but instead landed on Evan Fournier. To their credit, did not give up a ton to get him. So I don't want to make too much fun, but I have to go back and edit that thing I wrote for Fansided to add Nikola Vucevic to the almost trades of Danny Ainge. Boston has been one of the single most disappointing teams this year. Do you think Fournier can help them turn it around and turn into a legit threat, you know, to beat one of Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee, Miami in the first round?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we as an NBA community have slept on Evan Fournier way too much. Like, I understand he's not a perfect player. He's not one of those new age guys who's like a 6'7", 6'8" wing who can do it all and switch on to everyone. No, he's more of a traditional shooting guard. But you know what? That word shooting, he does that pretty damn well, Brian. And I think that matters. I think that is for him to help provide that additional spacing for Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and now also Robert Williams, who is doing crazy things. Like, I don't know if you saw the stat line. Dude had 20 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, and 2 blocks against the Rockets. Shot 9 of 9 from the field. Like, he's just doing damage right now. So now that you have these components that are all in play, and you add in a shooter who can just, you know, bust zones and come in as, you know, an instant offense type of situation, yeah, I think that helps them. Absolutely. I would be shocked if it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, they have more. They just needed another consistent scorer, and I know he hasn't really been that. So he's only played three games, so whatever. But you know, he, in his Celtics debut, he shot 0 of 10, which was not great. But then, you know, against Houston, he finished with 23 points. I believe 20 of those were in the fourth quarter. Like, he can catch fire. You know, given Kemba's struggles this year, they have Tatum and Brown, which is great. You know, Marcus Smart is just a smart player as well. No pun intended, but you know what you're getting out of him. Kemba is kind of a mystery box. You got to just hope the knee holds up. But now, you know, you're adding Evan Fournier to the mix, and you don't have to rely as much on the rest of the bench, which is filled with a bunch of young kids who are just by default going to be inconsistent. And now you can, I mean, if they really want to, they can go nuts and just super downsize with Walker, Smart, Fournier, Tatum, and Brown. Like that.
Yeah, they can.
I mean, that lineup defensively against Joel Embiid would probably struggle, but at the same time, they might be able to run you out of the gym offensively with that. So I'm not ruling out, like, I just won't bury the Celtics until they're actually dead. Maybe it's too much respect for what they've done in past years compared to this year's team. Like, maybe this year's team is just genuinely flawed and we just need to believe what the record says. But I don't know. I if they stay in the eighth seed and, like, Brooklyn gets them in the first round, or, you know, what, like, Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee get them in the first round, they should not be pumped. Like, I'd much rather face Charlotte, New York, Indiana, whoever.
I would agree. I mean, look, I think a lot of this also comes down to Marcus Smart missing 19 games. And Kemba just still with that knee, you know? I mean, he hasn't been reliable all year. I was very surprised to see the move off of Daniel Theis, though.
Yeah. What was...
like, that wouldn't...
It was just a luxury tax thing, right?
That's actually a very good question. I haven't really looked at it a whole lot from Boston's point of view. It could be. Like, it could be a salary issue, but, I mean, look, just in terms of the player...
Yeah.
That's a major loss. And I was, when I saw that deal go down, I was like, I'm sure someone got some details wrong. Surely they're not moving off of Theis.
Right.
They are. And you know, he's also a free agent after this season. So it might actually... Oh, and by the way, today's his birthday. Oh. So congratulations to Daniel Theis. Actually, tomorrow, April 4th. It's because it's past midnight here.
Okay.
He's so good that I have to assume that he's going to warrant, like, a major contract from some team this summer. Mm-hmm. And when I say major contract, I'm not saying, like, $25 million or anything of that. But I have to assume 12 to 14.
Well, maybe.
Is that a little bit higher?
I was gonna say, like, I could see him taking a good chunk of the MLE. I don't know if he's getting 8 figures.
All right. All right, maybe. Then between 9 and 11, though. Not between 9 and 11 would seem reasonable. Maybe the Celtics are just determining, no, we're pivoting over to Robert Williams. We're trying to make that happen. We're trying to see what they have. Maybe that's the ideology as well. Maybe there is, like you said, the luxury tax. I don't know. But either way, I was surprised to see them move off of him.
Yeah.
I really didn't see that one coming. Because defensively, he's just been such a steady presence for them.
Yeah.
But no, but this year has just been weird. I think, honestly, because of the record, for them to just kind of pivot a little bit and do something else, like, I see that. Like, I get that. I think there's some logic to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Theis thing, that was just I was still in a very sleepy haze at that point, so I might be totally off base here, but I think that was the reasoning behind it, but at the same time, it seems to run counter to, if you're acquiring Evan Fournier, who is also a free agent this summer, sure, you get his bird rights, you can re-sign him, sign and trade him, whatever the case may be, but acquiring him, using a big chunk of that trade exception, signals that we are still trying to win this year. Trading Daniel Theis to get out of the tax, if that was the rationale behind it, that does not send the signal that we are trying to win this year. So,
agreed.
Maybe you're just trying to balance the two. Like, you don't, you know, maybe if they were 5 games ahead of where they are right now, they wouldn't have done it. They just would have eaten the tax and they would have kept Tice, maybe because this season has gone as it has and they're looking up at the standings and saying, okay, we're not beating all 3 of Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee in the playoffs. So, like, let's just be reasonable here. Maybe that's the case, but I agree with you. That was one of the most head-scratching moves from the deadline, just from a pure basketball perspective.
I'm sure the Bulls loved it.
They should. The Bulls should be thrilled with how the entire trade deadline went down. They just were... They're like, okay, yeah, well, if you're going to sell all of your good players for 60 cents on the dollar, we will happily take them.
I actually have some extra info because this is something I learned today.
Oh, okay.
So... It was via The Athletic. Let's see who wrote it. It was Josh Robbins,
okay,
who came into the details of the draft picks that the Bulls sent to.
Oh, I saw the Magic. Yeah.
Look, man. I mean, when I first saw the trade go down, you know, you and I were DMing, yep, and I was like, I'm still waiting on like the pick protections before I'm completely in on this, because if that had been unprotected in 2021 and 2023, I would have been pretty skeptical about that deal for Vooch. And then it came out that they were both top 4 protected, and that just changed my entire opinion of the deal. Like, full disclosure, I still think both picks in the respective years end up conveying.
Yeah, of course.
But that's not the point. Like, the point is safeguarding yourself. The point is doing something proactively to hide your own ass, to protect your own ass. Like, the Bulls recognized, you know what, in 2021 there's this franchise altering guy in Cade Cunningham available. We're not gonna miss out on that if we end up just completely sucking. You know, we want to be sure. And in 2023 that could be the double draft. So for them to show that level of insight was great. And then now the prick projections actually got even better. So I'm just gonna read this. Mm-hmm. Both Bulls picks to Orlando are top 4 protected for the first year, then top 3 for second year, mm-hmm, then convert to 2 second rounders. Are you kidding me? That means at no point the Bulls are giving up unprotected picks.
Yeah. Orlando as well. Houston and Orlando should both be banished to the G League. That's how I felt about them at the trade deadline. Like, I just hope there is the outrage toward both of those teams that there was toward the process Sixers. Because, honestly, I think what Orlando did is just as egregious as anything that Sam Hinkie did.
I mean, I just don't understand. I even did a video on this before all... I mean, I thought all the details were out. I thought it was standard, you know, top 4 protection. If the pick wouldn't convey, it would be, you know... unprotected the year after. Mm-hmm. So I did a whole video on that on my YouTube channel, and now I have to go back and go, guys, so remember that video I did? Because we're going to change some things up. This is amazing that the Bulls did not give up any. Like, they are just, they basically came in and said, we love Vucevic, but at no point are we willing to sit and find ourselves in a situation where we are giving up anything without protection.
Right. Yeah.
And the Magic agreed with that logic.
Yeah, I know. Because it's not, I mean, even if the Bulls miss the playoffs this year, yeah, the likelihood is that both first-round picks will convey. But it just takes one stroke of luck, or I guess technically two strokes of luck, for them not to convey it. For them to convey is 2 seconds, which is just egregious.
No, but like just this year. So right now, let me just look it up. I want to make sure I get this right. I think the Bulls are on a 7-game losing streak. 6-game losing streak. but they're going up against the Nets tomorrow. So that's going to be a 7-game losing streak. After which, they're going on the road for 5 games against the Pacers, Raptors, Hawks, Timberwolves, and Grizzlies. So there should be a few wins in there. But, I mean, the Bulls could realistically look at a situation where they are going to miss the playoffs. And, yeah, then maybe they find themselves with, like, the 12th pick if they don't move up. Which case, okay, then you move the 12th pick in this year's draft, and then you still have the 2023 draft for Vucevic. You know what? That's fine. That's decent value. But then what happens if they jump up? Because mm-hmm. if they jump up, that is in the top 4. Like, there's no, they can't jump up to top five. Right. That possibility doesn't exist. Right. If you jump up, it's to one of the top four picks. Like, then you're looking at a Kate Cunningham. You're looking at Evan Mobley. You're looking at Jalen Suggs. You're looking at Jalen Green or a Jonathan Kuminga. You're looking at one of those guys, right? Like, right there for the taking. And Orlando just gets a long nose.
Yeah. I think, like, I'm guessing the main appeal was the 2023 pick, and they're just banking on the Bulls completely imploding, like LaVine leaving after next right. season. And, you know, like, basically a lot of their young guys are up. LaVine, Thad's gone. Markkanen's a free agent this summer. Now you don't have Wendell Carter Jr.
Oh, he's so gone, by the way. I have to assume so.
Yeah. So, you know, there is implosion potential here. But
right.
I like the game. I mean, like, I don't know that the Bulls turn into a title contender with a Vooch LaVine core. But I know they're just going to be fun. They're going to be a lot more enjoyable. And I feel like Bulls fans for the first time in years should actually be excited to watch this team.
Right. No, I totally agree. And look, here's the thing. Even in those extra years, like if somehow the Bulls jump up, if they become super sucky again, like, and I don't hope they do, but if they do, and they end up being like this perennial deep lottery team, top three protection for the second year.
Yep.
I don't, and then it converts to two second rounders. Like, how is this proper? You, like, we were told, Brian, for so long before the deadline that Vucevic, he is like their prize jewel in Orlando. Like, it's gonna take just so much to get him. Really?
And here's my question. How did Danny Ainge not top that offer?
Yes, that is the question I'm having as well. Because it was clear that they wanted him. It was clear that he would feel an immediate need. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, okay, to be fair, and I think this is an important point. The Bulls did take on Alvaro Gamino's contract. Mm-hmm. And we don't know if Wendell Carter Jr. was one of those guys that Orlando had just pegged as, oh, this guy's going to be good.
Sure.
And to be fair, he's delivered in the first three games. So perception matters. Maybe the Magic just said, you know what? We think there's a star in Wendell Carter Jr. And we don't think that Robert Williams or Romeo Langford or Aaron Nesmith or whoever. Like, we don't share the feelings that we have towards Wendell with those guys. So if that comes to if that's the situation, you know what? Fair enough. Then we can't insert feelings on behalf of teams. Like, if they like a guy, they like a guy. But you're right. I mean, I would be looking at all the youngsters. I would be looking at all the future picks if I was Boston, and I would just go, "Hi, Vooch. Let's get the deal done." Like, could you imagine Vooch, Jalen Tatum? Jesus.
Hate to see it. You really hate to see it.
By the way, one final note.
Yeah.
I really want to start some sort of initiative to get Patrick Williams to move off of 44.
Why?
It doesn't look good. It's not a good-looking jersey number. Plus, it makes me confused. I'm so used to watching Nikola Mirotic with that number. It's all, no. Mm. No, we need to get him into a single digit. But, oh, and by the way, Troy Brown Jr. went to the Bulls as well. Can we just...
He did.
Holla.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, maybe, wasn't he your most improved pick this year? There's still a chance, right?
with what, 20 odd games remaining?
A late surge from Troy Brown Jr. will get him into the MIP race. God. All right.
Man, you know, I will be horrible if that came to happen. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Next year. Just save it for next year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you, as always, for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and as always, I was joined by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Once again, congratulations to both you and your wife on a beautiful baby boy. So happy to see pictures of him, and I'm also glad that the clothes we got was not too small. That would have been horrible.
No, that was very much appreciated. He's going to grow into it in about 2 weeks at this rate, but yeah, everyone pray he eventually learns to sleep on a place that isn't one of our chests. But for now, I'll be watching Breaking Bad at 3 a.m. if anyone wants to do some Twitter after dark.
Yeah, definitely welcome to parenthood. It doesn't necessarily get better.
Great. Awesome. Really, really excited. All right.
Later, man.
Later.